This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Our news department is looking back at the COVID-19 pandemic as we just passed the fourth anniversary of the first patient in the state. This morning, we discussed the retail industry.
It was essential that we had a safe environment for them to come out and to shop in at the best that we could. You saw plexiglass go up at the point of sale.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. Darian DeVries led Drake University to six consecutive 20-win seasons and has a career of .732 winning percentage as a head coach. Now he has been named the 23rd head men's basketball coach at West Virginia University. DeVries spent the last six seasons at Drake, leading the Bulldogs to three Missouri Valley Conference titles and three NCAA tournament appearances. DeVries was hired at Drake prior to the 2018-2019 season and led the Bulldogs to six 20-wins seasons. DeVries agreed to a five-year deal with West Virginia University. DeVries is a finalist for this year's Hugh Durnham National Coach of the Year Award, given annually to the top mid-major head coaches in college basketball. As part of the federal spending package that passed Saturday morning at 2 a.m., Senator Joe Manchin said in a statement that he secured more than $138 million for 80 projects in West Virginia. The bipartisan appropriations package included six funding bills, including the 2024 defense, financial services, and homeland security budgets. The money for West Virginia comes from congressionally directed spending requests, also known as earmarks. Some of the West Virginia priorities in the spending bill include $10 million for clean hydrogen technology development at West Virginia University and funding for multiple military programs run by the National Guard. It also includes $425 million for the Black Lung Disability Trust Fund, $29 million for special benefits for disabled coal miners, and nearly $400 million for the Miner Safety and Health Administration. The Allegheny Front, based in Pittsburgh, is a public radio program that reports on environmental issues in the region. Here's their latest story about the updated growing plant hardiness zone map from the USDA.
It's finally spring, and many gardeners are thinking about when to put plants in the ground. Luckily, there's an updated guide for that. This is the Allegheny Front Environment Update. I'm Carol Holsapple. According to the USDA, 80 million American gardeners and growers use its plant hardiness zone map as a guide for planning and planting. Last year, it was updated from the 2012 version using data measured at weather stations from 1991 to 2020. And not surprisingly, with warming temperatures, about half the country moved into the next warmest half-zone classification. I asked Glenn Bupp, a commercial horticulture educator for Penn State Extension, how the map zones are determined.
They are based off of the average low temperatures over the winter, and they're in 10 degree increments. So the difference between 6 and 7 would be 10 degrees, but within those zones, there's A and B, which is separated by 5 degrees.
How do you use the USDA plant hardiness map?
It's a very good tool, especially when talking with folks about plant selection. And when they have questions about whether or not a plant's going to be well adapted to a specific area, that's one good way. Another would be for planting dates. So it can be very informative for when we expect our last and first frosts to be, which is useful for knowing if there's enough time for a plant to be harvested, or if you're going to put a plant in the ground, what kind of protection it may need if you're kind of hedging your bets prior to a frost.
An updated map was released late last year. What are some of the changes in Pennsylvania?
I mean, I deal mostly with Western Pennsylvania. And so when you kind of just type in zip codes, it's really a fun tool. It shows you what your USDA growing zone is. And it also will actually show you what the changes are from that 2012 map. On average, it's like a 3 to 4 degree change across different zip codes in Western Pennsylvania. So that might kick you from like a 5A to a 5B. It might even leave you in a 5A. That doesn't mean that we won't get, or in that year zone, you still won't get possibly a record-breaking cold. It just means that those averages have adjusted 3 degrees warmer. And that change, to me, is, it doesn't mean that we're generally warmer, but what that does mean is that we have like more wild variations, especially in our transitional season times. So it doesn't mean that we can go start planting palm trees, right? It does mean that we need to be careful with these temperature swings, especially like kind of almost what it feels like we're experiencing now, where it's really warm and then really cold. It's kind of indicative that you're going to get more of that.
How can home gardeners or people who have farms navigate changes in either their plant hardiness zone or increased temperatures?
You can be thoughtful about what you plant, for one. Plant things that are well adapted to our area. So I always like to promote native plants, for one. But just because it's native doesn't mean it's necessarily the right native. You want to be selecting plants that have wide ranges in their USDA growing zone adaptability. So for instance, if you're in a USDA growing zone 6, choosing something that has a range between 3 and 9 is going to probably be a pretty safe bet. Whereas if you're on the edge of that, you know, selecting a plant that maybe is a 3 to 6A, you might have problems with that. And you can think of it from the other perspective as well. So not pushing those zones. And diversity is good too. So, you know, diversity to me kind of is the same as resilience. So if you can put more diversity in your landscape, you're going to be resilient to variable changes in the weather. Bringing your plants in too. I mean, if they're containerized plants, don't be afraid to just put them in the garage for a short period of time to get them through some of the variable temperatures.
Glenn Bupp is a commercial horticulture educator for Penn State Extension. There's a link to the updated USDA plant hardiness zone map at AlleghenyFront.org. That's the Allegheny Front Environment Update. I'm Carol Holsapple.
The Allegheny Front is based in Pittsburgh and reports on regional environmental news. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Becoming mostly sunny today, highs in the 60s and low 70s. Increasing clouds and gusty wind tonight, lows in the 30s and 40s. Tomorrow, breezy with periods of rain, highs in the 50s and low 60s. A chance of rain on Wednesday with highs in the 50s and 60s. Support for WVPB is provided by the Kanawha County Public Library, providing more than books with its Idea Lab, Tool Library, KCPL Cafe, and Digital Technology. Information at kcpls.org. Shortly after the first COVID-19 case hit West Virginia 4 years ago, our way of simple day-to-day living drastically changed. Many of those alterations dealt with how we went shopping. West Virginia Retailers Association President Bridget Lambert spoke with Randy Yowie on COVID-19's effect on retail and how our shopping lives have forever been changed.
So, Bridget, what was the biggest impact that COVID-19 first made on retailers?
It was essential that we had a safe environment for them to come out and to shop in the best that we could. You saw plexiglass go up at the point of sale. We had different mechanisms that were going on the back end of the store and how we dealt with deliveries coming into the store. Boxes were sterilized with a spray. The employees were... we wanted the employees to be in a safe work environment, and so we implemented a back-end store safety concerns were addressed as well.
What about stocking issues?
We had a lot of our employees working evenings or nights to stock the stores so that they weren't in the middle of the customers coming in when they were shopping. So there were some shifts in how retailers stocked the stores. It also kept the employees from being exposed to more customers during the day. So we did do a lot of different things regarding inventory on the store shelves. As you know, we suffered some during the pandemic with being able to fully stock our shelves at all times because of supply chain issues we were dealing with.
And what did those COVID-related supply chain issues really involve?
It really involved several things. It actually started in the ports in California with some ships not being offloaded in a timely manner. We had trucking issues across the United States, and just COVID impact how goods were made and how they were shipped and the availability our stores had of receiving those shipments. It was not as standard as it was prior to COVID hitting. We may have 10 trucks expected to come into a large retailer on any given day, and four of them would arrive because that's all of the goods that were available. So retailers were definitely struggling to make sure they were able to keep the shelves stocked.
Have supply chain issues been resolved?
By and large, yes. We are seeing, you know, the store shelves are stocked more. We had a backlog of merchandise that was on back order from that time frame that has come in. Sometimes we'll be flooded with outdoor furniture shipments that had been on back order. Those type of things that we're dealing with now on the front end that goes to the actual customer. And we are working still yet to this day. Retailers are operating a little bit of a thinner margin of stock. They are very resilient in responding to the trends that are going on in the supply chain, but they are having, I would say, razor-thin margins of stock right now.
Talk about how COVID-19 spurred the development of phone and email ordering, curbside pickup, home delivery.
While the retail industry had been offering a diversified approach to shopping for customers, such as the online, that we had seen continued growth of customer online shopping year after year. The holiday season showed those numbers every year. And many retailers were still looking for a way to offer goods to their customers and through the omni-channel approach, and they were in the process of expanding that approach. But the COVID pandemic really blended traditional bricks and mortar store shopping with the convenience of online shopping. It also really forced the retail industry to pivot and focus more on resources such as the buy online, pick up in store, the buy online, ship to the store. Our bricks and mortar retailers stepped up and started to offer curbside pickup, contactless shopping where you can go online and order. It is put into a locker and you're given a code to access your order, and you can walk right out without having to go into the back end of the store or interact with any employees in the store. And so these emerging trends continue now to be normal for retail customers.
How do West Virginia retailers balance COVID-enhanced inflation when you have customers versus overhead?
Well, that is one thing that the retail industry continues to struggle with, because as you might imagine, it's very expensive to pivot a whole industry when you are dealing with something like shifting from mainly bricks and mortar customers to a lot of online shopping. The industries that really have benefited from this shift, you're seeing the warehousing, the delivery companies, they really have picked up their end of that situation and expanded. So as maybe in-store retail employment has gone down slightly, we see the shift in the jobs go to a different type of industry where they are picking up the packages, they're delivering to them to the front door. So the retail industry and the landscape looks a little different now.
That was Bridget Lambert, president of the West Virginia Retailers Association, speaking with Randy Yowie on the impact COVID-19 first had and continues to have on the state's retail industry. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Randy Yowie. Eric Douglas is our news director, and he produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.